Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. Can Theresa May blow this general election? Figures today from YouGov suggest that if the election was held today, she would be 16 seats short of a majority, back into hung parliament territory and doing considerably worse than David Cameron. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined to discuss this by Joe Twyman from YouGov and my colleagues Katie Bowles and James Forsyth. Now, Joe, how seriously ought we to take this YouGov poll, given that you work for YouGov?
Oh, well, and it's extraordinarily nice to see you too, Fraser. the way I would look at it is this. It is a snapshot of where we are at the moment. So this is YouGov's modelling of what the current voting intention would translate to in terms of seats, and based on the assumptions we have made on turnout and which groups are going to turn out.
Over which period of time? This is basically post the Manchester atrocity?
This is over the last week. It's 7,000 interviews a day, and each day the figure will be updated on the YouGov website.
So for each day you're now going to be giving a sort of snapshot. If an election was held today, this is how many seats the Tories would get.
Yes.
Now, not the wishing to be mean here, but didn't you guys make horrendously wrong predictions at the last general election? Well, the Times every day was regaling us with figures that turned out to be nonsense.
Well, you're right that the last time in 2015 we weren't where we wanted to be, and in light of that, we've done various different things. The first is we've identified the type of people that we needed to contact in greater numbers to be more representative of the population as a whole, and we've spent hundreds of thousands of pounds going out to recruit those people to make sure they are then in our samples and in our survey. So that's the first point that I would make. The error last time around was, while not brilliant, was not actually enormous. The average error was around 3.3%, which is big enough to make an error in a close prediction, but not as large, for instance, as the second round of the French presidential elections. The other thing that I would say is, last time around, we ran this same model. When we ran it during the campaign, we found that Scotland would go overwhelmingly to the SNP, the Lib Dems would be wiped out, and the Conservatives would do much better than the existing polling was suggesting. And we felt that was a difficulty in the model, and that the model needed to adapt to historical precedents. Those historical precedents didn't hold last time.
You actually did have this analytical tool last time, which was giving a more accurate result, but you didn't publish it.
Not only in 2015, but also at the EU referendum when we did publish it, and it never showed that Remain was ahead. And then also in the US presidential elections, where it showed that that Trump could do it in these particular areas. But again, you make with all polling, you make adjustments based on historical precedents, based on the data you have available, and that's what we've done here with the data, not just from our own data, but with data providing lots of demographic information from things like the census and the British election studies.
Now, Katie, this isn't a bolt from the blue. You revealed in Coffee House last week that the Conservatives have dramatically written down their own internal expectations of the number of seats they're going to win at this election. Do you think they'll be starting to panic yet?
I think there are definitely worries. They wanted their attack lines to be more believable, to people to think that there really could be a coalition of chaos, but I don't think they wanted it to be this close to the wire.
And remind us of the figures that you revealed in your story last week.
So what I understand is the case is that they've revised their projections down. So the ceiling, which is the best case scenario, is now a majority around the 80 mark, and the floor, which is the worst case scenario, is a hung parliament, which is why when I saw this poll and a few people wanted to laugh it straight out of the building. I mean, I don't think a hung parliament is likely, but it is something CCHQ are definitely keeping in their projections of what might happen and factoring in.
It's worth pointing out, of course, that those are projections for where we will be on the 8th of June, whereas our poll is simply saying where we would be were the election to take place today. It's certainly true that, again, on historical precedent, if you look at the underlying data, it still favours the Conservatives. Theresa May is still seen as the best Prime Minister when it's a choice between her and Jeremy Corbyn, by some distance. They are also ahead on Brexit, they're ahead on the economy, they're ahead on security, they're ahead on immigration, etc., etc.
Now, James, you've just filed the cover story for this week's magazine, where I noticed that you're fairly dismissive of the current polls. You basically say that it's you think Theresa May is still going to win and win quite big?
What I say in the cover story is I think this is going to be a 1987 style victory for her, not a 1983 style victory for her. In that we've got, this is very similar to the 1987 campaign, in that there is a campaign wobble, and that the Tories look like they might lose an election that people thought they never could lose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that the other similarity is people thought the Labour campaign in 87 would be bad. It was good. Another similarity with today. The aura of invincibility that surrounded the Tory leader receded during that campaign. And I think you saw the effects of that in the next Parliament with Margaret Thatcher. What I would say, why I'm sceptical of these polls is this, is two reasons. First of all, I don't think young people are going to turn out in the numbers that these polls are suggesting. I look at the EU referendum, which was a more seismic vote than this one. And if young people didn't turn out then, why are they going to turn out now? I don't see... I think that unless the Corbyn offer to end tuition fees has a kind of level of cut through, even greater than the polls are suggesting, I find it hard to credit that young people are going to turn out in the numbers that they are. My other reason for scepticism is... One of the things I found during the last election campaign is that you talk to people on the ground and you got a different sense from the national polls. Talking to people on the ground, I'm getting a sense that London is less good for the Tories than they would like it to be. But the North East, the North West and the Midlands, they are still on the offensive. They are still taking Labour seats. And interestingly, that is a similar view that you get from Labour MPs. I was talking to various Labour people yesterday who were saying, I don't know about the rest of the country, but in the Midlands, we are still going to lose seats. But that's the reason I don't think this. The other thing I think as well is Joe's crucial point that we've still got a week to go. And I think one of the things that has happened in this campaign is the public don't like being asked to vote in unnecessary elections. And this is, frankly, an unnecessary election. It's one that Theresa May has chosen to call.
As Zach Goldsmith found out, you're not always thanked for this.
The other thing Tories... canvassers say that on the doorstep they're getting a lot of, oh, you think we've got nowhere else to go, we'll show you.
But how are they going to show her?
Well, I don't mean they're actually going to show her by voting for Jeremy Corbyn, ultimately, but they're cross. They don't like the idea that they're being taken for granted.
It's certainly true. I should say here that one of my colleagues, I probably shan't name her, in the building, is a Conservative Party member who told me this morning that for the first time in her life, she's not going to vote for Theresa May. So dismayed is she by the general direction. Isn't sure if she's going to spoil her vote or vote Labour. But this is a card-carrying Tory member. So I think, you know, I was quite surprised to find that, but there certainly are people who are sufficiently annoyed.
And when I saw this thing, I was reminded of an article that Mark Texter, who's one of the Tory pollsters, the other half of Crosby Texter, wrote, when he basically said he has decided that, having worked on all these election campaigns recently, that voters now are manipulating the polls to send messages. And so even if they don't actually intend to go and vote for Jeremy Corbyn, they like to send a message to Theresa May, don't take us for granted and scare the pants off her. And I think that that is one of the factors we are seeing here.
Now, Joe, I'm quite struck by what you were saying earlier on, that YouGov has got this new methodology, which, had it been applied at the last general election, had it been applied in the EU referendum, would have given us the correct result. Now, as I understand it, the problem facing all opinion pollsters is, how do you know who's going to turn up to vote? In the Brexit referendum, we had people who'd never voted for years, perhaps ever, turning up to vote, which is what surprised us. In the 2015 election, you had older people who voted in greater numbers than we thought. That was, at the time, seen as the reason why the pollsters got it wrong. So what assumptions have you made now? I mean, James is saying he doesn't believe that young people are going to turn out to vote. I mean, if you look at the polls, something like 60% of young people say they're going to vote. Strikes me as an exaggeration. So what assumptions are you making to put the Conservatives in such a dire predicament?
Well, what we've got are the three different elements when trying to predict what the result of any British election will be. We have the question of voting intention. So which party, if there were a general election tomorrow, as we say during peacetime, and then thinking about the general election on June the 8th, how will you vote? We have that question that asks people simply who they're going to vote for, and we get the percentages from that.
That must have stand. Everyone asks that question, don't
Yes,
they?
That's right.
Sure.
Everyone asks the same question, and that's the crucial point. And we'll come back to that in just a second. Because at the moment, that's one element. We then have the second element, whether you're going to vote or not. So there's a question of who you're going to vote for, whether you're going to vote
Again,
or
everybody
not.
Asks that,
And then how that translates into individual seats. So everyone asks pretty much the same question for voting intention. And if you look at the underlying data before the turnout filters are applied, most of the pollsters are on pretty much the same story at the moment, that the Conservatives are ahead, but they're not ahead by a massive amount.
So what's your magic ingredient then?
So the next element is then how we apply turnout filters. Now, firstly, people ask turnout in different ways. There's not a received wisdom in the way that there is around the voting intention question. So people ask in, different ways, and some people go with self-reported turnout. So they ask people whether they're going to turn out or not in different ways, and then make a judgment based on that. Others use demographic information and a whole host of socio-demographic information to make a judgment based on the type of voter that they are. And what we're doing in this new model is we're combining both of those.
Right.
And in our data, it doesn't matter whether you look at things in terms of the demographics or whether you look at things in terms of the self-reported. Once you apply that turnout filter, it has pretty much the same effect.
Have you given it a name, like the truth teller or something like that?
Much as I would love to call it the Twyman turnout test, it hasn't yet caught on.
Okay,
so no, we don't have something for that.
But it would have predicted Trump, Brexit, and the Cameron majority, and now it's saying that Theresa May is going to be 16 points short. And Katie, I'm wondering, how much do you expect this to change? And this is the great question that politicians differ over. Do campaigns make a difference? I mean, we are following this every day. Anybody listening to us right now is sufficiently interested to listen to a daily podcast on the subject. But most voters only ever look at this through their peripheral vision. So are they really going to change their view that much between now and polling day?
I think campaigns do make a difference because, look, Theresa May was riding high. Now Jeremy Corbyn has gained a lot of popularity. And a lot of people blame the Tory manifesto on that because people don't pay attention to every policy. But you get a general vibe of whether a party is going to help you, whether they're going to, you know, give you free tuition fees or you're going to have to pay. I think there's plenty of time for May to maybe turn this around because she's had quite a lot of disastrous interviews.
I mean, Liz and Crosby, we're told he's taking control.
Yeah.
Now he's going to pare it right back.
I think, yeah, they know that. When they're talking about Brexit, that's what seems to get the best response from the public. So we're just going to hear a lot about Brexit.
And James, are we going to hear strong and stable, or actually you turned on strong and stable?
Strong and stable, I think, has been retired because it invites weak and wobbly. I think...
That's a great little point, though. Her call sign was strong and stable until the U-turn, but she dropped strong and stable. I even saw the word conservative making a comeback
indeed.
Did yesterday.
I'd say two things. First of all, I think this campaign has mattered to the general public more than most because they didn't really know either Theresa May or Jeremy Corbyn that well. Theresa May's only been Prime Minister for a year, and I think up to this campaign, she was this blank canvas onto which the public were projecting things, and they wanted to give her the benefit of a doubt. So if she appeared a bit uncomfortable on television, it's because she wasn't a slick salesman like Cameron or Blair. If she didn't appear to say very much, it's because she played her cards close to her chest. And I think what's happened in this campaign is she's got more definition and people have stopped getting her the benefit of a doubt, you know. So I think by seeking to kind of consummate the marriage with the public, she's ended the honeymoon. I think on Jeremy Corbyn, the public had this sense that he was hopeless, very too far left wing, etc., etc., etc. I think one of the things that the Corbyn team have done a good job as is of moderating him in how he is presented to the public. I think the public are, you know, we all grade on a curve, and he is exceeding the very low expectations that the public had of him. I think one other thing I would say, I think what Tory canvassers tell me is that the polls freaked out some people. So in the opening week of a campaign, you had people saying, oh, I'm Labour, I've been Labour all my life, but I'm going to vote for Theresa May because Jeremy Corbyn's rubbish and I think she's quite good.
And this was a relatively new phenomenon.
Yep.
And people got, you think, too excited and about the Labour
switchers. Then I think what happened is you had these 24-point Tory leads and something in the psyche in these traditional Labour areas thought, oh my God, the Tories are going to have all the power. There are going to be no restraint on them. They'll be able to do whatever they want. And that has freaked people out. The other thing I would say about why campaigns matter is campaigns matter here. This campaign has fundamentally changed Theresa May, I think, relationship with her own cabinet. I mean, I'm amazed that even now, after this poll, how many members of the cabinet seem to be enjoying this rather than panicking. I mean, there is something going on there about this.
Well, I think the something is quite clear that she has said, right, I don't need you guys. I'm going to win a personal victory, and when I finish, it's going to be all me, and you'll do what I say. And now they're watching I get in trouble, and they're thinking, well, you need us after all, it seems.
No. And I mean, the other thing is this dementia tax. You know, the Tory grassroots...
So-called dementia tax.
Sorry, we'll have... I think the Tory grassroots thought that Theresa May was one of them. You know, she joined the party as a teenager, met her husband at a Tory disco, still goes canvassing. She seemed much closer to them politically and socially than Cameron and Osborne
had. Think the Tory members think that Theresa May's so-called dementia tax is fundamentally un-Tory.
Yes, because for them, passing on to your children is kind of fundamental to their psyche, and it is what they are going to do, and she's struck at that. I think that one of the other problems, one of the things that Katie touched upon in her column in the I newspaper this morning is about, you know, how does Theresa May get out of this? And it's very obvious, talking to someone who used to work for David Cameron in Number 10 this morning, it's very obvious how Cameron would have responded to his YouGov poll, which is they'd have rewritten the stump speech, we'd have all been told there was a new stump speech being unveiled, and he'd have basically gone out there and said, what pumps me up in the morning is this and that. There had been a very obvious change of gear designed to kind of create a media narrative of a fight back. Theresa May doesn't do that. And that is the kind of question for her, which is how does she change this narrative now that it is kind of setting in place? And the other problem she's got is campaigns, when they're winning, everyone wants to tell you it's going brilliant and it's all great. Now everyone wants to tell you that, oh, I thought that was a bad idea, or I wouldn't have done that. And I think we're going to get more and more stories about kind of tensions and splits within the Tory campaign. You know, the slight whiff of panic that you can smell coming out of CCHQ now as you walk past it on the way to our office. You know, all of this is going to carry on. And I think that does create a problem for her in terms of getting back onto the front foot.
So, Joe Twyman, the final question to you. You're going to be producing these figures every day?
Yes, that's right.
Now, isn't it a situation that pollsters come up with figures which they feel in their bones to be untrue, so they basically correct them? And right now, most people in Westminster think Theresa May is going to head for victory with a reasonable majority. I think the par is 80 seats. Anything more than that will be a pleasant surprise. Anything less, a disappointment. But the consensus, even now, as James was saying earlier, is somewhere in that ballpark. So can we expect to see YouGov go from a prediction of 16 below what's needed for a majority, steadily going towards the par? I mean, will you adjust it based on what your sort of other, on what your spidey sense tells you?
Well, there are two different things going on here. Will we show Theresa May climbing in the polls? Will we show this gap closing and the Conservatives pulling ahead? We may well do, but if we do, that will be because the underlying data has changed. It will not be because of the changes that we have made to the methodology.
So you're not going to tweak your assumptions?
No. We are confident in the power of our data and the smarts of our data scientists that we have something that works, and the changes that take place will be a reflection of changes that are happening on the ground, changes that are happening in the data, not because we think, you know what, this historical precedent states such and such, so we need to bump this up a bit. It doesn't work like that, at least not anymore.
Joe Twyman, Katie Bowles and James Forsyth, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, in the iTunes store, and also rate it if you hadn't had the chance to do so yet. And subscribe to the magazine itself on spectator.co.uk/subscribe. Thanks for listening.